We'll divide into some discussion groups, at which point I'd have everyone mute themselves except for, you know, the five or so people that are in the discussion group. And so we'll have essentially about four different discussion groups, and I'll let you know the subjects for those in a little bit here. So at some point I'll divide us up. It might be interesting. I almost wonder if we can divide people into a Chariot Tower group, a Star Strength group, a Magician Wheel group, and an other, because we've got so many people in each one of those. But so that's just an option. We'll close with, hopefully, if we have enough time, if I can stay on schedule here, we'll close with a few minutes of review or summary or kind of debriefing at the end. My goal for tonight, of course, is not to learn everything there is to know about the tree. Rather, what I want to do is introduce you to basically these four specific tree to tarot correspondences, and provide instructions and examples with how to work with them. And so those will be introduced in each discussion group. My Kabbalistic process is to study, to contemplate, to meditate on the correspondences, and to draw your own conclusions as to what they mean. But what happens in this process is the more you do this, the closer you come to arriving at an understanding of the concept that you're contemplating. So your first, which is to say, a truer understanding of it. So your first contemplation, you might get some insight. Something might be relevant to you. But the more you contemplate it, the more you will approach its it's kind of ultimate, almost platonic type of truth. And the idea behind this is that there is an kind of a collective unconscious type of group mind around, and essentially what is theorized by some people, especially in the Western mystery tradition, which is, as I'll probably remind you frequently, the tradition that I follow. A lot of people in that tradition believe that there is kind of a group mind around certain ideas and concepts, and that as you contemplate them or meditate on them, the more you do that and the purer your meditation becomes, the closer you connect with this kind of collective unconscious that's specifically devoted to whatever concept you're studying, in this case, the Tree of Life. And once you kind of arrive, the more you study, the closer you come to arriving at this universal shared state, and kind of connecting with what other people have thought about the same subject. And that's kind of the how behind how receiving information, i.e. you have more relevant and more truthful and more important insights into the information. So that's just kind of my thoughts on what this is all about and where I'm coming from. I imagine everybody has the handouts with them. Just for convenience, I didn't number the pages because they kind of aren't in a particular order, but at the same time, for convenience, what I want to define is the first two pages, of course, are the how-to. The third page that has an example of the process I described in the first two pages, that third page with the circles, with all the circles, that I'm going to refer to as the emanations. So you might want to write that at the top. top of the page or just otherwise remember that page is called the emanations. And then the fourth page that is circled in lines is going to be the tree and path. And so again, make a note on that. And if anybody, if I lose people, please stop and interrupt me so I can go back and review things. The first thing I want to do is talk, I want to introduce you to some of these basic concepts, but I want to ask about people's experience looking at the handouts. I'm sure some of you haven't even had a chance to look at them at all. Probably some of you have actually were able to actually sit down and maybe draw the tree. Probably most of you somewhere in between. So I'd like to just get some people's thoughts on what the handouts meant to them and what they experienced through reviewing it or working with it. Cynthia, do you want to go first? Because I know you really liked it. As soon as I sent it out, you sent a comment back to me right away.
Hi, Joy. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Your question was?
When I sent out the handout, you responded right away with a comment about that you really liked that.
Yeah, I
really liked it.
I did.
You want to tell people why?
Yeah. I think what hit me was something Paul said at the beginning. There are many different trees of life, and this was one circle, the four circles and the interconnections between them. That sort of hit me for a reason. If it comes up, I'll mention. I don't think it's appropriate to mention now. But also because I got a sense that, more so that I am above looking down at something that's actually a little tiny dot. And it has, been expanded out for a point of a visual.
Yeah.
Attention, which I don't get so much with the second or tree and path paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I think that's one of the reasons I named this one, or this one's referred to as the emanations, because it really expresses that clearly, I think. And one of the things I want to define in our for our vocabulary for tonight is to say that the Kabbalah is very much a creation process. And one of the important stories behind it is the idea of the Tsimshon, and that's spelled T-S-I-M-T-S-U-M. And it means contraction. And basically, in the beginning, God is pure light, and he filled up all of time and space. There was nothing but God. So I guess he was lonely or something, but for some reason, he wanted to create something besides himself. But he took up all of time and space. So in order to for there to be anything else besides God, he actually had to contract himself. And when he contracted himself, there was resulting darkness. And he sent a ray of his light out into that darkness. And that is that first line in the that we drew in the handout. So it's very, very much about a process of manifestation. Did anybody have a chance to actually draw the tree? Nine?
Hi, Dad. This is Jordan.
Hi, Jordan.
Hi, Dad. And what's interesting to me is I hopped on my CAD system to draw it differently, and two things happened. I drew it with a wall where there were two lines making every line. What's interesting about the intersections of all the places is there is a six-pointed star at every intersection on the tree. I thought was interesting. But also, when the four circles go together, at the very top, extending above Cater, is a triangle, and it's the fire symbol. And then if you flip the triangle back, the bottom point ends up at Yesod, which is an earth symbol triangle. And then you keep going, overlapping that, there's an air symbol and a water symbol. So what was nice is elementally, four worlds were created symbolically just off the intersections of the four circles and connecting some dots with the path.
Exactly. And that brings up the next important concept that I want to discuss, which is the idea of the four worlds. Arising out of that line, the ray of light that God sent out, are these four circles, and these are the four worlds. Essentially, in the Kabbalistic theory, God is much too intense for us to see or conceive of or interact with, so he has to moderate his energy and step it down in order for us to experience him. So the four worlds are the first method of this moderating that energy. And the four worlds are assigned to what's called the Tetragrammaton, which is a big word that means the name of four letters. And this four-lettered name is Yod, He, Vav, He. And it applies to each of those four big circles. So the top of the big circle is Yod. It's actually Yud, and I learned it wrong, and so I will probably continue to pronounce it wrong. But if you want to know the correct way, and Rafi always says there is, if anybody tells you the correct way to speak Hebrew, they're wrong.
According to the Chicken Kabbalist, there is no correct pronunciation for any of this stuff.
Exactly. So the top circle is Yud. The second one down is He. And you can spell these phonetically because there isn't a correct pronunciation or spelling in transliteration into English. The third circle down is Vav, and the bottom circle is also He. And the top circle, Yud, is associated with the element fire, as Jordan pointed out. And the second circle, He, is associated with water. The third circle, Vav, is associated with air. And the bottom circle, He, is associated with the element earth. So I'll repeat that as we go, but if you want to take notes, I think it'll help you. So anybody else work with this and have any interesting experiences that they want to talk about? Or does anybody, just as they're looking at the handout, does anything come to mind?
One thing does come to mind to me immediately, and that's the intersections that are involved between these worlds.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, John. Yeah, go on. Yep. Talk more about that.
You can speak up, John, and it'll help. We can hardly hear you.
Okay. I'm using kind of a headphone set, so can you hear me now?
Yeah. Speak up.
Okay. They correspond roughly with, the horizontal paths on the trees, which are, bridge the two sides, left and right.
Yes, nice. And this to me is really fascinating. Do you know what that shape is called? Yes, and I think that's pretty interesting. But go on with what you're saying.
What is the shape called again?
The Vesica Pisces.
Vestithica? Is that it?
I don't know. Vestithica. V-E-S-I-C-A-N.
Yeah, just for the benefit of everyone, that happened really fast. So.
Yeah, sorry. Go on, John. Sorry to interrupt.
No, pretty much that's, you know, gist of a thought, really.
So what we get is we get these the horizontal lines, but we also get the vertical lines too. Which are the three pillars. So the horizontal lines are at the overlapping, those overlapping intersections of the larger circles. What's kind of interesting,
Troy, can you clarify, you're talking about three parallel lines now?
You're talking about
straight lines, so there's one straight line down the middle. That one I can't miss.
Right.
Where are the other two straight lines? Because they're not actually drawn on the thing.
Correct. They are drawn on the tree and paths, if you also want to look over at that for clarification. But what John was talking about, which is an interesting thought, is that where, for instance, the top circle, the big circle, the first and second big circles overlap each other and form that vesica piscis. Those two spheres or sephirot that are on either left and right, the left and right of those intersections, it's hard. This is why teleconferences are hard. So basically, of the little circles, there's the top little circle, and then below that are two little circles that are on the same plane, right?
Talking about the bottom circle now, or are you talking about the top circle?
In order to explain it better, I switched to the smaller circles.
All right. Okay. So you're talking about the smaller circles.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the Keter is in the center of the first circle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Makut is at the bottom of the last circle.
Right.
Right.
And what John was talking about is that below Keter, or the little circle at the very top, are there two circles that are in the same plane, that are in the same horizontal line.
Right.
And his note, what he noted, is that horizontal line that links those two, in the tree and path, it is a horizontal line, but in the emanations, it is a vesica piscis shape. Which I think is pretty interesting, especially because the vesica piscis, if you're not familiar with it, it's symbolic of the creative generative organ, the female generative organ, the yoni. And so again, we're back to that idea of the manifestation process. The other thing that I'd like to bring up while we're looking at the tree, looking at lines, is that in addition to those horizontal lines, there are three vertical lines. Clearly, there's the one main vertical line that's drawn on the picture. But and on that main vertical line, there are four smaller circles, as well as four larger circles. And to the right of that main vertical line that's drawn in the emanation diagram, on the right there are three smaller circles, and on the left there are three smaller circles. Those are called the pillars.
So what's the names of the pillars on my right?
As you're looking at it, the pillar on the right is the pillar of mercy.
Okay, and then there's the middle pillar, and does that have a name?
Exactly. It's the middle pillar, or the pillar of equilibrium.
And then the one on the left, as we're looking at it.
And that's called the pillar of severity.
Mercy and severity.
And if you're looking, okay, if you're looking at those right hand, that right hand pillar, those are the three smaller circles on the right hand side. Of those three on the vertical line, the middle one is Chesed, which is spelled C-H-E-S-E-D, and it means mercy. So that's where the name of the pillar comes from. And opposite on a horizontal plane, so the middle small circle on the left-hand side, that one is Gevura, which is G-E-B-U-R-A-H. And Gevura means severity, which is where that comes from. So are there any questions so far? Or any other comments, or anybody else have anything to bring up and talk about in terms of their experience just looking through that? Yes?
It's very interesting. I'm here in front of my computer. This is Johanna speaking. And the Vesica Pisces not only is in sacred geometry, but it's also in used in the grinding of lenses.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
And we know all lenses make us are supposed to work to make us see clearly.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. It's like tree eyes almost on the tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that allegorically or metaphorically, it's just very interesting that it's used in optometry.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Spinoza was a Kabbalist after all.
I don't know. I really liked Spinoza when I was in college. Are there any other comments?
Oh, it might be also worth noting that the... Can you still hear me, or is that...
Yep.
Here. Yes?
I got you, yeah.
Okay. That the Vesica Pisces shape is also, you know, pretty prominently featured in most versions of the world card.
Yes, good point, yeah. The wreath around the figure in the card is often described as being shaped like a Vesica Pisces. Again, and I'm going to go ahead and run with that, John, if you don't mind. The world card... Now, if you look, if everybody looks over at the tree and paths, I should have just provided you all with a labeled thing, but I was so optimistic that people would just revel in writing down all this stuff. so you can curse me later. I will send out a labeled diagram for everybody afterwards. At least take comfort in that. In the tree and path diagram that has those straight lines on it, that very, very bottom circle.
Small circle.
The small circle. Well, I'm looking at the tree and path one.
Okay.
So that small circle at the bottom is Malkut, which is M-A-L-K-U-T-H. K-U-T-H. And above it you'll see that out of Malkuth, there's a little path that goes straight upwards, and that, so the little circle above it is called Yesod, and that's Y-E-S-O-D, Y-E-S-O-D, Yesod. And so the path that connects those two is the path of Tav, which is the world card. And often on Kabbalistically, the process from Yesod, which is in the, now looking at the bigger circles over on the emanations diagram, Yesod is considered to be in that third world that I said was the world of, that was associated with Vav or air, and Malkuth is in its own world below that. And so the process from Yesod, from this, from the world of air down into the world of earth, is a process of giving birth. So that path is often considered kind of a birth canal experience, or a coming into being experience, which, and to associate that with the world card, especially considering, as we were just talking about, the idea of the vesica piscis, which is the generative organ or the yoni, and bringing that forth into the world of manifestation, really, really powerful, really powerful symbolism. And you can see that these subtle little clues in the tarot cards, like the wreath around the woman that's shaped like a vesica piscis, you know, is really referring to some pretty powerful symbolism. What I want to do next, I think we've covered most of the basic terms that I wanted to talk about, the four worlds, and I'll probably, I don't want to throw too much vocabulary at you, but as we go into the individual discussions, I'll probably continue to expand on things. The ten sephirot, so the sephirot are the, so the four big circles are the four worlds, the ten small circles are the ten sephirot, singular sephira, plural is sephirot. The idea of the tetragrammaton, or that four-lettered name, the ineffable name of God. The 22 paths, which is on your tree and paths diagram, the straight lines, those are the paths. And the idea of the three pillars, which are the vertical pillars, the pillar of mercy, the pillar of the middle pillar, and the pillar of severity. So what I want to do now is take some time to divide up into groups. Do I hear a second for my idea of dividing via birth cards?
I wanted to give an alternative version for the, to sort of the idea of the contraction of God.
Excellent. Okay, great.
There's a lot of versions of this floating around there. You know, actually, one of the great inscrutable mysteries of, is why there is any creation whatsoever. And when you become really wise, you know that nothing was created at all. But until we're there, in the issue of while we're confused, we think there is a creation, and so then the question becomes is why is that the case? So the version that Joy gave, if I'm not misrepresenting it, was that God is complete and utterly without a necessity of anything other than what God is. So there was no no cause coming from God for creation. So then what was the reason for creation? It didn't come from God, because God has no desire to be other than what God already is. There is no lack. There is no, everything is perfectly there. So the desire for God doesn't have a desire to create. However, within God, who carries everything that possibly could be, and everything that couldn't ever be, that within there, there is a desire for creation that comes not from God, but from us. And then, of course, the question is, well, we don't exist yet. We haven't been created yet. In God, we were created, but we are created in God as not knowing that we are God. That, in other words, we're pre-created in God to not know that we are God, and which is the contradiction that is not in God, but is in aspects of God's infinite being. And so the contraction comes for this creation to happen, not from God, but from us. So God created the universe for us, and so that we would know that we were God, and that would then we would be complete and happy. And so we go through this strange process of life because we who are God don't know we're God, and we need to discover that, and discover that in its fullness and truth rather than in its pretense so forth. So that's sort of that's a variant on the same on what the contraction is. There's actually other ones out there too. Maybe they'll come up.
Yeah. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that or any knowledge of that? I don't know, Paul. If I put them all to sleep.
Well, we're, you know, new group. We're not used to talking to each other yet.
Yeah, Jordan here.
Hey, Jordan.
What's interesting is just the combination of the words inner divinity and there's the word avatar. There's lots of different synonyms for that, not just inner divine, but drop the modifier of inner and just call it divine. And that becomes being. And then that becomes then what Paul was talking about, is that finding God as yourself rather than just simply within yourself. It's a total phenomenon, which then with the Tree of Life, you get the four elements. It's both inner and outer.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Jordan. I'm not sure I'm ready to riff on it right now. But yeah, the idea of it's the as above, so below, essentially. And that's definitely something that we can play with as we do this.
And that's an alchemical premise, which will can run a thread all the way through at whatever scale we ever want to talk about it with. So
going once, going and dividing up by birth cards, and I'll tell you who your partner's in. I didn't write them all down. Is anybody vehemently opposed to that idea?
Maybe not vehemently opposed, but maybe with so many people with similar proclivities, it might, everybody would maybe be a little too much in agreement, perhaps.
Well, if it's seven wheel magicians, you don't have to worry about that because we don't agree about anything.
I can't imagine the Tower Chariot group agreeing on anything.
Take the Hangman Empress, will overfill or overflow anything. So I would say, actually, with the first course, and also to the quietness and people simply listening to find out, what's this all about, that I'd keep everybody together. To bring in the 2 cents worth, et cetera, until a dynamic is established. And it's just my 2 cents.
Oh, no, I definitely want to divide into groups. I think it'll encourage people that have been quiet so far to know that they're only one of five while everybody else is muted so that they feel comfortable talking. Don't you think so, Paul?
I've never had difficulty talking, unfortunately.
Nice.
Sharon, for what it's worth, this is all so new to me that I'm just trying to comprehend and make sense of it. breaking off into a group. I'm not sure what your goal is in doing that.
Okay, good question. So what I'm envisioning and is I've got four, and oh, maybe this will get some people's thoughts. What I want to do is divide this into four sub-discussions, four sections. And I'm not saying, you know, it's not like where I have a room full of people and I tell you to all go off into a different chat room or something and talk. It's everybody else is quiet and listening, and this group of five people or whatever will be talking. And the group will include Paul and me. So there will be some...
So you got four topics for discussion. What are they?
And the four topics are the four worlds and how they relate to the four suits, the ten sephirot and how they relate to the pip cards, or the number cards of the minor arcana. The third one is placing... There's a second way to place this tetragrammaton on the tree, and that relates to the court cards. And the last discussion group is the 22 paths, which relate to the majors. We're not going to go into detail on any of this. When we talk about the suits, we probably have time to gloss over all four suits, but like the tip, we'll probably discuss one set of numbers, like the fours or the nines. The courts, again, that's brief enough, we can kind of gloss over it. With the majors, we'll probably discuss one path on the tree.
I think for people who might be confused, what we're doing is we're painting with a broad brush, and a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight is sort of summary statements about things. We're going to get into the details of how this stuff works and how it works with tarot in the other class where we have time, and we'll be focusing in, you know, like on parts of the tree and dealing with it in detail and with, you know, fine detail. That's not what we're doing in this class. We're going over broad concepts in a broad way.
Yeah, this is basically a survey. So I think what I want to do is, how about, does anybody, given those four subjects, is there anybody that says, oh, please, 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 I want to be in the X group?
Can you go over the subjects again, please?
Sure, yes, I can. The four worlds relate to the four suits, wands, pentacles, cups, swords. The ten sephirot relate to the pip cards, the minor arcana numbered cards. Then there's the court cards, and the last one is the major arcana, relating to the 22 paths on the tree.
Well, why don't we just start on the first topic we want to discuss, Joanne. And people joined that want to join in.
Okay. So you don't want to do the meeting?
I think it's a little bit too soon for some people to make a commitment.
Yeah. So you know, let's people who want to discuss the elements and the four worlds and how they relate and how they relate to the suits. Let's start discussing that.
May I make a suggestion? I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with the four worlds and see how it goes along. Because,
okay.
You know, some people are very new to this and they need to, you know.
Yeah. So whoever wants to join in on this is perfectly kind. If,
right.
By the way, we go off and start talking about something, and you don't know what the heck we're talking about, please, this is what this conversation is for. Say so, and we will and say how you're don't know what we're talking about, or how it doesn't make any sense to you, and we will gladly bring it down a notch.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what the purpose is for.
Mm-hmm. So the yes. I just wanted to ask, what did you say the court cards relate to? Oh, the court cards relate, there's another way of associating the tetragrammaton with the tree. And so there are four of those sephirot, and I'll explain it in more detail once we get to that section, that relate to the court cards. If you already know the names of the sephirot, it's Chokhmah, Bina, Tiferet, and Malkut that is relate to the tetragrammaton and the court cards, but I'll go into details on that once we get there.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss that. Okay.
Sure, no problem.
And by the way, for a little bibliographic background, if somebody is interested in a handbook, it goes into Kabbalistic Tarot at great detail. That's actually the name of it. It's called Kabbalistic Tarot. It's Kabbalistic Tarot by Robert Wang, Wang. It's a solid handbook. It gives all everything that we're going to talk about in this class is in there in sketched form. Though to be honest with you, you still need to read other books to be able to make sense about what it's doing. But if you want the full geometry and the full range of the material as far as having a good resource goes, Robert Wang's book is probably the best that you can start with.
And I have a list of books too I wanted to suggest, which I'm going to save to the end or maybe email afterwards. But thank you, Paul, for that one. That one's not on my list, so I'll make sure to add it. So what I want to do now then is I'm going to just continue talking. I'm going to talk about these four worlds. If anybody's on their computer and they feel the need to Google the Tree of Life, you'll probably find it pretty easily already labeled. And again, my apologies. I didn't make a good decision to send this out unlabeled. I actually went in and whited out all the labels I had on it. So
I disagree. I think it's good that you did that.
Okay, good.
I like the fact that we get to write everything down. It's an important connection. So I think you did the right
thing. Thank you. I appreciate that. If you look at your emanation sheet, that top large circle that I said is related to Yud, which is commonly spelled Y-O-D or Y-U-D, and also related to the element fire, that's the world of emanation. So you want to write that down, the world of emanation. And that world is called in Hebrew absolute, which is A-T-Z-I-L-U-T-H, absolute. The second of the big circles going down, which I said is hay or water, that world is the world of creation. And it is the world of Bria, B-R-I-A-H. And of course, you will find every spelling under the sun for these words. But this is what I come across most commonly in the Western mystery tradition. I've got to make really clear, and I said I'll probably say this a million times, the Western mystery tradition is not the Hebraic tradition. So if you go to your local rabbi and say that you learned all this stuff, he will probably throw a fit and tell you that you're wrong. Coffee too. He's been trying to get me to say Yud for like 3 years now. And then the third world down, the third large circle down, is Vav, or air, and that is the world of formation. And that is called Yetzirah, Y-E-T-Z-I-R-A-H. Z-I-R-A-H, Yetzira. In fact, a lot of the information that the Western mystery tradition pulls from for their Kabbalah is from the book called the Sefer Yetzira, which is the Book of Formation. I'll go into that in just a second. The bottom world, the bottom of the four circles, of the large four circles, is hay and is associated with earth and is the world of Asiya, A-S-S-I-A-H, and that is the world of manifestation. It's also called the world of making, and sometimes I hear it referred to as the world of action. So manifestation or making. So basically what we have in these four worlds, the top one, emanation or absolute, is that idea of something out of nothing. The second one down, Bria, the world of creation, that is especially being associated with water, that is let me explain. This is how I'm going to explain this. In the Bible, if you ever read the book of Genesis, in the first chapter of Genesis, God creates everything. But then if you keep reading, in the second chapter, he does it all over again. And you're like, what? Did they have two versions? And they wanted to include both of them? Do I get a choice? What's going on? What happened is God created everything in the chapter one, and in chapter two, he actually formed everything. So that's a huge difference. So creation is when you have an idea of something that you want to do. You have a desire to make something. And then formation, or Yetzira, the third one, that's when you actually start getting your hands dirty and working with it. So Yetzira comes from the word Yotzer, which means potter. So think of a potter working with clay. That's what formation is all about. And then the bottom world, Asiya, or manifestation, that is the finished pot. That's, you know, the finished item that you've created. That's what you put the price tag on and put on the shelf to sell. So,
let me
if I may interject real quick. Joy, there's a real good example to synopsize also what you just said. That's a complete reinforcement, and just the word architecture. In its classic Greek roots, arche is the initial inception or creation, the idea, and then techne is the making, the putting together of that idea, which totally, you know, overlays right onto what you just said about the chapter one, chapter two kind of thing. Or even in the picture is a synopsis of that quote-unquote creation story, where there's a big differentiation made between what is creation and what is making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really an interesting point, Jordan, that you're the one that took the time to, or that had the time perhaps, but I'm sure that there's a lot of various reasons why people didn't draw this, but it's really interesting that you did, being an artist and being an architect, that you have that geometric sense. The math works for you as well as the ideas. To look at it more broadly, not just an architect or an artist, but anybody that creates anything. And this can be as simple as sometime about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you start wondering what you're going to have for dinner. And that, you know, the sudden little blip in your mind is that you might be hungry in a few hours. That's emanation. That's absolute. The actual thought, what am I going to make? What are we going to have? You know, I think I have a pound of ground beef that needs to be used up. You know, that's the world of creation, Bria. And then when you get home and you actually, you know, pull the ground beef out and put it in the pot, you know, you're actually forming your dinner. That's the world of Yatsira. And when you serve it up, that's the world of manifestation, the world of Asiya. So everything we do, all that we do is based in this process of manifestation. And all that we don't do is because we have not gone through the process of manifestation. All the things that don't get done at the end of the day is because you skipped a step, you tried to do, you either tried to do it with, while skipping a step, or you're blocked at one of the steps for whatever reason. So this is not just, you know, high, pie in the sky, philosophical, spiritual ideas. This is about getting through our day every day and making things work and making things happen and getting things done and creating our space around us and creating ourselves, ultimately.
I think that's a good analogy. I want to give another one,
mm-hmm.
Which is a psychological one. Instead of starting with starting as God and working your way into the world, most of us psychologically start with the active world, with our senses and what we see in the world. And first thing we do after we are perceiving the world, we go through a formative aspect. And basically, the formative aspect is our idea of the world. But this is a derivative, an empirical idea. We're talking about Yetzira. We're talking about the formative ways. By formative, we're talking about these are the empirical ideas that we get from the Malkut. And that becomes part of our language. This is our constructed world, and this is these are our ideas of it. And this is, you know, this is the ABCs that we learn when we go to school. This is a very limited way. This is the also the arbitrariness of language, that, you know, some people don't speak English and therefore would not be able to understand this conversation on the phone. That's because of the derivative things from the world. So it's pretty obvious we're talking there on a way of culture. And we're also talking psychologically, we're then talking about basically the surface level of yourself. It's not a superficial surface because it includes your culture, includes a lot of deep knowledge you have about what's to be expected when you walk into a store, you have to pay somebody before you can walk out with the stuff that you get in the store. There's a whole variety of kinds of knowledges that you get from that. Now, the creative world is a deeper level of who we are, and it's the level of creative imagination, and it's also the level of where we dream and where we put things together in terms of deeper meanings. In other words, we don't necessarily get everything we want from our sensate world or from from the culture. So the creative world is how we integrate that in a soulful level, at a very deep soulful way, and also from that, the reason that's creative, this is also where we become, where we know, become to know ourselves. You know we're not a sum total of the accidents of the kind of family or the bringing we got, or the accidents of our education and stuff like that. So we get into the creative world, the archetypal world. This is actually why people are drawn to the tarot. This is why people are drawn to its art at some level, sometimes to its symbolism, to its mythology, and to its religion. And so the creative world is where some of that awakens in us. So obviously, the creative world is not really lit up by formative concepts or the active world. In fact, in some ways, though we may try to use them to understand this thing, the creative world actually gets its light from the archetypal world, from Absolute, the Absolute, the archetypal world. And so another way of seeing this psychologically is that the formative world and the creative world are psychologically our surface self or our ego, which would be the formative world. That's our constructed self. That's our that makes it in a culture. Bria is the outlines of your deep self, but in a potential state. So these are the archetypes of these would be the archetypes of the creative and conscious, according to Carl Jung, would be in the Bria world. And then Absolute, the archetypal world, is the divine impulse, is the light of pure consciousness. That is, and the difference between that is the difference between one soul and one spirit. The spirit is the a unitive, the spirit is what is unites with God. Soul is the garment that our experience of spirit, we wear it in this world. And the soul, as it were, strips down to its bare essentials to be spirit, which is the pure light. So the other thing about soul is soul tends to be reflective light. And we'll talk a little bit about that also as we talk about the four suits and how these worlds relate to the suits.
Right. Thank you, Paul. Good segue. So that world of emanation, what Paul's calling the world of spirit, the world of absolute, this is the element fire. And so it relates to the wand in the tarot deck. And we're going to use the association of wands as fire and swords as air, which is consistent with the, again, with the Western mystery tradition, the Golden Dawn, and that kind of stuff. So one of the things that you want to think about, and this is where you kind of riff on the ideas, does anybody want to volunteer something? When you think of the world of emanation and that something out of nothing, and you think of the wands, what relationship do you see?
How about, like, the creative itch?
Yeah.
You know, the urge, but not anything else. You know, just the... Oh boy.
Exactly.
It's always there. It's a part of an essence of being, but it's not. It has to be channeled.
And keep going. Relate that. That all sounds really right on with the world of emanation, and also help us see how it's the suit of wands and tie them in together.
Oh. If we think of wands as being fire, then the heat, the vibratory heat.
Okay, good.
That is constant. Remember, this is a fire that does not die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not. You know, it is constant. It is pulsating.
Mm-hmm.
It basically is the source.
Yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Well, I was thinking of wands in the Rider-Waite-Smith as depicted with little leaves on them.
Yes, Cynthia, exactly what I was thinking of.
And I was thinking of photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of sun. The sun is always on one side of the world or another, perceived and seen. And I was taught that photosynthesis is a form of fire.
Keep going. This is great.
And photosynthesis is also what gives us the ability well, how would I put it? It's a digestive process within us.
Uh-huh.
So we are able literally to take in. It's almost communion, if you will. You take in the nourishment, the spiritual nourishment.
Yes.
At the same time, a wand, literally in a magical or ritual tradition, is used to give off that energy, take it down from above and release it into the world.
So now a more general question for people that are people are seeing now that we've kind of done a little bit of this, are people seeing the process that we're doing? We're taking the symbols that are Kabbalistic and we're relating them to the tarot and seeing what we learn about the tarot in the process.
Okay. So there. So basically, the four suits are stages of development.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, actually, another way is that analogy you gave about making the pot or even getting lunch together, the idea to its making and making creation and then finally the serving of it. I mean, as simple as that may seem, all of these, it's like one process. You know, we're breaking it down analytically so that one can see how. So, for instance, if there's a preponderance of swords comes up in a reading, one of the things that can come up is it may be that where the person is being stuck is in this level of formation, and that may be the area where there is either an issue of incompletion or an issue of the configuration might suggest.
Or conflict, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There would be conflict between the formation and the action, or the creation and the formation.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, how many people try to drink water with a knife, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, so it's in the same way with, doing with the sword what you can do with a cup is different, and sometimes we make those kinds of errors in our lives.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you take Yetzirah as the formation and air and swords, then what you have here is people get stuck. The best thing is when you're stuck is to take action, which is pentacles. And how do you pronounce that?
Asiya,
and get it done. Just make some sort of action. Just please go somewhere.
Well, that's the best way to learn.
Don't try to straddle the fence.
The best way to learn magic is to try to do something magical, and then see what kind of mess you get into.
Get a result. Yeah.
Yeah. And then see what kind of mess you get in, and that's how you figure out how you do magic.
Exactly. It's a scientific process. It is very much a scientific process. I think people are definitely getting this. I'm ready to move on to the next one, and hopefully these others will go a little bit faster. So the second one that I want to talk about is the 10 Sephirot. So, pens at the ready, because I'm going to tell you all 10 of them, and so it'll be some quick writing here. If you're on the emanations page, these are the smaller circles. If you're on the tree and path page, which might be a better place to write them right now, these are the circles. The very top one is Keter. Keter. These spellings are not the one and only. If you want to spell it any other way, you're welcome to. Cater means crown. And I think I'll just do a title and a translation. So cater and crown. The second one is moving from cater to the right as you're looking at the tree. And that one is chokmah. C-H-O-K-M-A-H. And it means wisdom. Now you can take that path, that horizontal path, and follow it straight across to the left-hand side. That is number 3. And that is Vina, V-I-N-A-H. It means understanding. So now we have cater, crown, number 1. Number 2, chokmah, wisdom. Number 3, Vina, understanding. Now, this is the jump. Vina, understanding, goes to the one that is not connected by a line. That's number 4. It's immediately below chokmah. Number 4 is chesed. This is on the right-hand side. This is the one that means mercy and is the source of the name for the pillar of mercy. Going across on the horizontal to the left-hand side, we have number 5, Gevurah, G-E-V-U-R-A-H. It means severity. So now we have cater, crown, chokmah, wisdom. 3 is Bina, understanding. Jump to 4, chesed, mercy. And across to 5, Gevurah, severity. Right smack dab in the center of the entire thing is number 6. It is Tiferet. T-I-T-H-A-R-E-T-H. Tiferet. It means harmony or beauty. A lot of these have multiple titles, and I'll probably accidentally throw out other ones as I go along. And then continuing on that same diagonal path, the 7th one is below Chesed. Its name is Netzach, N-E-T-Z-A-C-H. It means victory or perseverance. And then going across to the left-hand column, we have number 8, Hod. It means splendor or yielding.
That's under number 5.
Yes, thank you. And from number 8, number 9, which is underneath number 6, 9 is Yesod, Y-E-S-O-D. It means foundation. And immediately below Yesod, at the very bottom, is number 10, Malkut, M-A-L-K-U-T-H, and that means kingdom. And I'm sure everybody got that just perfect, right?
Uh-huh.
Does anybody have any questions?
I'm interested in alternate names.
Okay.
For example, severity, Gevurah. What would be some of the synonyms that are commonly used?
I think aggression.
Right.
That's
a concept associated with it, but it's not an alternate title that I've heard, that I'm familiar with. Are you familiar with that as an actual title?
No, I think it's a concept. You're right,
right, right. Right.
Let me see. There was another title.
Another title, I think it's Strength.
Yes, thank you, Strength.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
Well, glory. Let's see.
Well, glory is hard.
Yeah, glory is hard, right.
Power, power is the one, is the other one I'm familiar with. So severity, strength, and power are the three that I'm familiar with.
Great. Thank you very much, Troy.
Yeah, well, you can also see that there's some PRO major arcana that happened to respond.
They start to pop up, don't they? Okay, this is our process, our meditative process for the sephirot. These relate to the pips, so that's the numbered minor arcana cards. So for Cater, crown, it'll be all the aces. So all four aces from your deck, and you will think of the concept behind the Sephira Cater, and you'll relate those to the aces. Do we want to... What I'd like to do is pick just one. Sun Cater? If nobody cares, let's do that.
That sounds good to me.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So if you've got a deck with you, go ahead and pull the aces out. And if you don't, I'm sure you're familiar with what they look like. So who, does anybody have any ideas to start with? We're thinking of Cater, crown. If you look back to your emanation sheet, you're thinking this is that first Sephira that arose out of the center of the world of emanation. What are some things that come to mind?
Well, one thing is that there is a absolute basic symbol of the suits and all the rest. It's the basis for what everything else is representing or describing process thereof.
Okay, go ahead and just pick one ace and be more specific just with what you're saying.
Well, let's just say the Ace of Cups. That's mm-hmm. It's just a single cup that's represented. It's the symbol for its element.
Yes.
Not the entire suit, it's permutations of that symbol.
Yes.
Representation, the idea of cup, the idea of water, the idea of Bria.
Right, and in the Golden Dawn titles, the esoteric titles, the aces, like the Ace of Cups, is the root of the powers of water.
Right.
What are some other thoughts on this?
Other thoughts in what sense, Joy?
Just thoughts on relating the aces to Cater the crown.
Well, Joy, would you assume that one then would be root of the power of fire?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Swords, root of the power of air.
Yep.
And discs, root of the power of earth.
Yeah, that's right.
But
and then, ironically, or not ironically, because it's the system, but if you go all the way down that middle pillar to Malkut or Kingdom, where the tens are, of course, ten reduces to one and returns us to the egg.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
And the pages, I think, are called thrones of the aces.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's not one that I've worked with a lot, but that's a nice point. Yes,
so we make it complete. It's a complete circle in a sense.
And that exactly what you're describing is. Again, relates to a Kabbalistic philosophy. Malkut, number 10, kingdom, is considered the cater of a new tree. So Malkut does get superimposed with cater, and an entire new tree springs out of it. And this can happen philosophically four times, so that the top of these four trees, resulting trees, the top one would be the world of emanation or the world of absolute. The second tree would be the world of creation, of Bria, and so on. And to point out that the tens in Malkut reduced to one is just a perfect metaphor for the for that process of producing a new tree. Thank you.
Yeah, there's another way of looking at it too, is that the each one of the rules or the big circles has within it its own tree. And so you could say there are four trees. I mean, that's one way that it's looked at. And in that way, the Malkut, Malkut in the center trees are also the crowns for that progression of trees. There's a superimposition of the crown and the beginning and the end are superimposed over each other. But which is very complicated, but it does show that each card then carries with it a complete spiritual realm that one can become aware of. Crown itself has a many esoteric ramifications, both in the masculine sense of the crown being a the roof of the skull or the roof of the sky. This would be the throne of God. But if you turn the crown over, you have the receptive thing, which is the yoni, which is the vessel of creation. And so you have in the crown both the masculine and the feminine perfectly united in this thing. So the aces also then represent the element at their spiritually most intense. And in fact, as an accident one day, a month ago, somebody came in and was doing a reading, and they got a whole bunch of aces in their reading. And I was just blathering on, well, you know, it's a super relevant, blah, 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 blah. And then the person explained to me, well, that's good because I'm a nuclear engineer and I'm looking for work.
Oh my God, wow.
So what's interesting is that in that case, I learned more about the aces from my from the Aquarian than I would have ever figured out on my own, you know. So and there is this endless creativity when it comes to in terms of what the aces are. They are fundamental. They represent the fundamental mystery of that element, and not the element just as, you know, stages of matter. I mean, even physicists recognize the stages of matter, which correspond with earth, air, fire, and water. But they also represent it in its most impenetrable mystery, and that way, one should show respect, because these are the elements that compose our body and our soul and our very spirit. And you could say that they are the substance of God, which we have borrowed to come into being.
Well, it's a matrix of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And matrix, you know, actually even means that. It means mother tripod, right?
Go on with the idea on the matrix.
Oh boy. Now you can whiskey on them. Okay. it's a formula it could be a formula for all creation.
Yeah, exactly.
All substance. In fact, there was something very interesting that they just had on Nova, that they found that there is fractals. Mm-hmm. That fractals, if you find the fractal formula for a leaf, you will
in the forest. You can find the fractal formula for the whole forest.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a Nova special that was recently aired, and I think it would really benefit this group to go on the PBS and the Nova station and actually look, review that fractal. In fact,
yeah,
they found out that the fractal, there is no fractal formula for cancer. It's just one big
Okay, hold on. Somebody's making a lot of noise there. If you know it's you, can you mute yourself? Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. Continue.
Yes, they found that the a cancerous growth has, it's not, the fractals are totally jumbled.
It's randomness. It's chaos.
Totally random chaos. It is chaos.
Wow.
What's interesting is that fractals are often seen to be something that nobody, that everybody was overlooking. And yet when we go back to the traditional teachings, of which obviously the Tree of Sephiroth represents, in some ways there is a recognition of fractals in this, in these traditional teachings, which, though they didn't invent fractals, fractals were only really discovered in this in the 20th century, and it was and it was done by somebody who was interested in looking at things rather than, and pictures rather than dealing with the more abstract relationships in mathematics, which is where a lot of people thought.
And his name was Mandelbrot.
Mandelbrot.
Yeah, yeah. Mandel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. Interesting. This is all great stuff. I want to transition on to the next one. And even keeping it simple, because I love going into just amazing, this idea of this matrix out of, you know, the unmanifest out of which things come into being. But that symbolized very simply on the cards, because each of those aces in your traditional cards is going to have a hand coming out of the clouds holding that symbol. And that's exactly what we're talking about with the idea of something coming out of nothing, something arising from the unmanifest into the manifest, whether it be through this matrix process or the fractal process, or whether it be through, you know, the nuclear physicist or whatever. Anyway, I'm going to go on. So the next one that I want to talk about is the Tetragrammaton on the tree. So we've already discussed how the Tetragrammaton associates with the four worlds, but it also is positioned on the tree. There are different ways of doing this. There's different ways of doing almost everything that I talk about. But I'm just going to tell you the one way that I learned. So, Chokhmah, wisdom, is also associated with Yud. Bina, understanding, is associated with Hay. Tiferet, harmony or beauty, is associated with Vav. And number 10, Malkut, kingdom, is associated with final Hay. So that means that Z is this one. Now, the other thing that I, disclaimer I want to give right now, is that for everything I tell you about Kabbalah, the opposite will also be true. So you're going to go and tell this to somebody else, and they're going to say, oh, that's 100% wrong because it's actually A, not Z. And they'll be right. They'll be absolutely right. So we have a sense in which Yod, or fire, is going to be related to Chokhmah. This is via... I know that at least one person I know for sure, and some other people probably in this group, use the Toad deck. And there's a strong argument through the Golden Dawn for placing the throned kings, the
kings that are the kings in the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, those at the position of Yod. There's also an equally strong argument for placing the Rider-Waite-Smith knights at the position of Sire or Yod. But for right now, I want to stick to the most traditional, so I'm going to place the Rider-Waite-Smith king or the Toth knight at the position of Yod. Hey, Dina, understanding number 3 is going to be water and the queen. Six, Tiferet, harmony or beauty, is Zog, and that's air. And this is going to be your Rider-Waite-Smith knight, or it's going to be your Toth princes. And Malkut Kingdom, number 10, final hay is earth, and this is going to relate to the page.
Why don't you give the numbers for the tree that you're talking about? So kings is what number? Number 2?
Kings is number 2.
Queens is number 3?
Queens is number 3.
And then,
knights are number 6. And pages are number 10.
Okay.
Oh, can you hear me, Troy?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So relating this to Tarot, we could say there's a strong relationship with pages or princesses, tens, and aces, and with kings, the 2s, or the top knights, and the 2s, and queens, the 3s,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth, and 6s. So that may not be something that is written about strongly in books, but taking things from a reading Kabbalistically, we'd want to be aware of that, and then further what the path might be.
Right. And we'll get to the path in probably about another 3 or 4 minutes here. But does anybody have any thoughts or anything they want to that really strikes them about this placement of the court cards on the tree?
I have a question.
Okay.
We find swords in terms of tarot anyway to be a very difficult suit, and the knights reflect the swords most strongly. And yet, we have them in Tiferet.
Harmony.
Yes.
Now that's a paradox to me.
Yeah.
In terms of the tree. And I've always been puzzled. The court cards, some of you may know, are a particular interest of mine. And I've really struggled with the court cards, trying to make sense of them. Is there a reason, Kabbalistically, for this placement that you would know that would result?
Yeah, and I've got about 10 pages written on it so far.
Oh, good. fabulous.
And if you take the course, you may be able to find out what that is.
I am taking the course. Definitely am taking the course. Thank you. All right, well then, I'll have to wait.
I think one of the things, let me throw this out. I think the court cards are complicated, and I think I'm just going to expound now for a moment. One of the truly fascinating things to me is the kings and the knights. And you'll notice that I referred to the throned kings, which are the Rider-Waite-Smith kings that are seated in a throne. And the knights are mounted kings. They're also kings. They're both kings. So there's the mounted kings that are mounted on horseback, and there's the throned king seated in their throne. The Toth deck, Crowley reversed that. So he took the mounted kings and placed them at the top of the hierarchy, and the princes, he are in chariots. They're still moving, but they're seated in the chariots. So they're throned kings. And the reason he did that is that he had this entire Egyptian stuff going on, and this Horus over, being the sun that took over from Osiris and all this kind of, so he was all about upsetting the status quo, and that's why he did that, and that he's, I mean, that was kind of the theme of his whole existence. But that's why he did that. I'm going to stick to Rider-Waite-Smith terminology primarily just because I think it's a little bit more common, and it's something that I actually just really enjoy and like. But one of the things that I've been working with is the idea of the king, the fire, the throned king, the fire, and the mounted kings as air, and the mounted kings, since they're on horseback, they're moving more than the throned kings. And harmony is, as Cynthia pointed out, a place of balance, a place of rest. It's a central, it's center. Tiferet is also associated with the sun. Each of these is associated with a planet. Chokmah, wisdom number two, is associated with the fixed stars or the zodiac. So, basically, one of these paradoxes, and paradox is just the quintessence of Kabbalah. It's examining paradox and coming to a balance between paradoxical understandings, and that's the truly spiritual part of it. The fixed stars are in early Renaissance philosophy, they believed that the earth was in the center and there were all these spheres that surrounded it, and that there was the earth, and then the moon was in a crystal sphere that moved, and then beyond that was Mercury in a crystal sphere, and so on. So the fixed stars were that which didn't move. So that's why the kings are, in this paradigm that I'm introducing right now, that's why the kings are seated or throned and not moving. It's because they're related to the fixed stars. But the fixed stars are much closer to what's called the prima mobile, the prime mover, the thing that causes everything to move. So that's why they're closer to that. That's why they're fire. And I could go on. I'm not going to. But that's just kind of an introduction to all the associations that you can make examining how these Kabbalistic symbols relate to the tarot court cards. Anybody want to throw anything in before I move on to the 22 paths?
Yeah.
Yeah,
John. You've got to have to speak up if you want to be recorded.
Well, just in terms of just putting the knights in the spot of Tiferet there, considering the king and the queen as alternately the father and the mother, that the knight could be equivalent to the son or the product of the interaction of the father and the mother.
Exactly.
The opposite. And basically, Chokmah and Bina are opposite parts of, like, you know, just like, almost like a combustion engine, where Chokmah is the impulse. Bina is the vessel that contains the energy and formates it.
Mm-hmm.
It's channeled down into a point of balance, which creates a third entity, which would be the sun, a.k.a. Tiferet, a.k.a. the night.
Yeah.
I think it should be noted in passing that severity and the queen go together, which means that women tend to be take laws a little more severely than men do.
Thank you, Paul.
If you want to get back at me in my sexist comments, you'll have to take the course, huh?
And I'll explain the true mystery behind the pillar of severity in the female.
To get back to what Cynthia was saying, the attributes of Vav being swords and Tiferet being the area of beauty, mercy, harmony, whatever, self-redemption, self-messiahship, that type of thing. It's almost, Cynthia, the closest thing I could say, Christ at the second coming.
Well, I mean, that's very much what six is often seen as. It's the heart of the separate. That is the traditional place of Christ in the tree of life, or mm-hmm. The center of the perfect man.
But the
conquerors are knights that are there.
So?
And knights are warriors.
Yes, yeah.
Well, haven't you heard of the Knights of Columbus?
That, the Templars, and all kinds of knights. But we always see, I don't know, I always see them as being the more difficult core cards, the more difficult aspects of our personalities, if you look at them as people cards. But that's neither here nor there. Maybe I'm going to reform the way I do readings.
The other thing is that if you look at, in modern psychiatry and types of things, mm-hmm. people who have messianic complexes, which is not obviously something that would once strive to appear, or other forms of bizarre ways of aping the divine mission or a sense of messiahship or a sense of martyrdom, all of which are difficult aspects. And they are, and it is a flaw. As an archetype, those are ways that people often misperceive the role of themselves in terms of approaching the divine. They think that, well, the only way that I can be truly united with the one is to become martyred, or is to have some mission, that is, because all of which represents this kind of doing of knighthood, and all of which can also be seriously problematic in terms of the balanced way of the way things go.
I think, and this is kind of a different thought on the matter, but one of the other things that popped into my mind was that Tiferet is considered above the veil. So the veil is an imaginary line that goes above Hod and Netzach, above 7 and 8, but below number 6. So it's an imaginary line that separates those spheres. And Tiferet is above the veil. Tiferet represents our higher self. It's a location of, in the Western mystery tradition, the holy guardian angel. It represents, and Tiferet, of course, is the one sphere of the lower seven that connects directly to Kedar, so to the divine, essentially. So basically, we're talking about the idea of the knights as ego, the knights as being having mastery and yet still being in movement, still being ephemeral. Because the true, we get to that point, and I think kind of Crowley got there and forgot that he really wasn't at the divine yet. anyway, I'm not going to badmouth Crowley. He's fine. He's got some really interesting stuff out there. Brilliant man, for sure. But the knights, I might say, represent ego. The knights represent that which is ephemeral, and the divine is that which is eternal. The sun is moving more than, our Chokmah, our fixed stars up there. And it's to remind us that when we arrive to that position, which is a powerful place to be, like the knights are very powerful, that we're not all the way there yet.
And on that wonderful note, one could see how the way you would transvalue the meaning of the full deck of tarot cards just by by becoming aware of how each of the cards does place itself within this configuration, the sacred configuration, and therefore can be pointing to that, both in terms of sacred psychology, in terms of spiritual psychology, how we're getting to know ourselves, and also in a practical psychology of how we're adapting in the world. You wanted to move on, right, Joy?
Yeah, we're unfortunately, we don't have very much time left. So, I think what I want to do is just throw out the teaser that the paths, the 22 paths, which relate to the majors, that's really kind of the thrust of what the next few classes, the next series of classes is going to be. Practice, you can jot this instruction down of how to do this on your own. But if you remember when I talked about, towards the beginning, I talked about the world card is the path of Tav, and the path of Tav connects number 9, Yeso, the foundation, to number 10, Malkut, kingdom. And I said how Yesod is in the world of formation, whereas Malkut is in the world of manifestation, and how Tav, the world, represents that birthing forth. That's the process for the 22 paths. You'll look at Malkut to Hod, and that is the path of Shin, which is judgment. And you'll look at how judgment is taking from the bottom of the pillar of severity and bringing it down into the world of manifestation. So what you'll do is take two of those spheres and you'll meditate on what negotiates between them, and that will be your card, your tarot card. So what I want to do in the last 5 minutes here is open it up to any questions, and I will promise to email out some further reading material and a chart that's all filled in so that you can double-check your own notes that you took tonight.
Also, if anybody's interested in actually signing up for the regular series, which begins next week, feel free to get in touch with myself or Joy by email, and you can go to Joy's website and pay by PayPal. If you don't want to pay by PayPal, you can make arrangements to send us a check. Well, I'll breathe heavier next time.
Breathe. This is a very thought-provoking teleclass, that's for sure. And it makes me think of different levels and how complicated this whole thing could really be.
Well, I have to say that I know that it sounds complicated and it may seem confusing initially. However, actually, it's very simple. Once you actually understand and have meditated on it, you'll see that there's a kind of organic flow, and that this seemingly artificial construct actually has behind it a very a hidden geometry. And that was actually the beauty of your having us at least theoretically draw the diagram, was because one of the things that was by showing how you geometrically create the Tree of Life by doing the four interpenetrating circles, you start to understand some of the hidden geometry that behind this. This is not just some strange thing that came out of nowhere. There's actually a purpose behind it, and as there is also a geometry behind some of the other classical glyphs that you see, such as the normal glyphs for the zodiac or for the planets.
Now there are other trees of life.
You mean other arrangements for the tree of life? Yes. Yeah.
Well, no, actually, there are other trees. There's just a simple tree that sparks from Adam, kind of thing.
There are other. She's talking about other diagrammatic representations. Yes,
that's true. Of that particular tree. Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so interesting is why this one is so popular.
I don't know. It's probably the most symmetrical. I don't know. I've wondered about that, too.
Are you talking about the path arrangement?
No, I'm talking about the actual trees of life.
Yeah.
There actually are different ways of them. Well, what's his name in that?
They have names to them also.
We're using the Kirchner. The only other one I can remember is Isaac Laurie or something like that.
Yes.
And that one looks completely different.
I think
one of the major differences that we would have to take into consideration in terms of the tree is how far down Malkuth goes. In some of the earlier trees, which are practically the same, the moon and judgment are not attached to Malkuth. The fall is more dramatic.
Well, the other thing that really changes with the trees, looking at Krishna's variations, is the paths are very different.
Well, that's also true of Garrett Knight and some others who allow people more liberty in terms of the placement. But I think it's helpful to have a consensual system. And I'm sure Joy will provide that in terms of the pad.
Right, and I've got Garrett Knight's Kabbalistic symbolism here.
Mm-hmm.
I use that quite a bit, and he uses this arrangement. I haven't studied the other trees. I've just stuck to the one. I only have so many hours in the day and so many cells in the brain.
Yeah, tell me about exactly. We all know we don't want our brains to explode, as I say.
Yeah.
Other diversions other than...
Well,
yeah, totally.
If you're being pure Kabbalist, working with this primitively, you might say, as Tarot's Kabbalah, we're working either, I would assume from what you said, with the Rider-Waite-Smith and the Crowley. Interchangeably, and perhaps the Marseille deck. And I don't know, I guess other people might be using other decks, I shouldn't say, but...
Yeah, just as a side note, in terms of the classes, there's no assigned deck to use. I've been teaching this stuff for a little over 2 years, and people bring in just a all kinds of different